Hello, everyone. Let us see if we are now going live. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Give me a sign when you are receiving this. Okay, so the first 10 minutes of the show, I've been talking about the fact that I'm going on Paramount Tactical tomorrow, so there won't be a regular show. I'll be going on their stream at 8 p.m. Eastern time to talk of my theory, which has gone virally, 260,000 views on X. My theory of the Charlie Kirk projectile trajectory. Now, why did the show get cut? It was a very bizarre cut because it wasn't a technical issue on my side. And what I see is my YouTube interface has completely changed. They've updated the live stream deck, and now it's so basically they updated the production code. That's what happened. Now, don't update production code at 7 p.m. Eastern time when Papa JF is straight into a streaming session. Normally, you do these changes that are stream breaking. You do them at night at 4 a.m. Anyway, so now we're back. I'm not going to repeat what I said about my theory and all. So you can go see the first 10 minutes in the other video. Now we're going to jump into our subject, which is the analysis of the Piers Morgan, Nick Fuentes interview. It's almost like an important moment, this interview, because it's such a moment of the handing of the flame for one generation to the other. And what Nick Fuentes has been extremely successful at doing in this interview, which I wasn't necessarily expecting anything about this interview, but Nick Fuentes was able to make the kind of empirical, in-your-face demonstration that, look, there's a generation of boomers, they're never going to change. You can serve them with the sauce of live streaming. They're still not going to be live streamer in their heart. They're going to be boomers forever. And this was a surprising demonstration, something that we don't get to see often, where we really saw that there's an old guard of moralists. They're stuck with boomer thoughts. And you can just laugh at them. You can literally say, fuck your couch. And you can bring your dirty feet into Piers Morgan uncensored and say, fuck your couch, Piers. Fuck your couch. And that was absolutely beautiful. It was really mastery of a high degree that I've highly appreciated. Doubting Thomas is on the chat. He says, JF, I'd be curious if the ATF Ballistic Forensics Lab comes out with a report, if they were involved and if they haven't already. Yeah, we don't get much. We don't get much from the official voices, which has created a whole business of conspiracies on the internet. That's really too bad. So John Drake says, absolutely, the old guard and the old tricks are done. Yes, and it was kind of a visual, like when you look at the visual where Nick Fuentes was playful, joking, he was showing an ability to not care about, you know, this ridiculous struggle session that they did by bringing in a message from Finkelstein. If SNL was making a parody, it wouldn't have been as bad as it was. Like, the thing was parodying itself. I got my friend Finkelstein. You know what it reminded me? It reminded me when Ben Shapiro says, I have a friend who happens to be in the diamond business. And you're like, yeah, you do. And it's like, oh yeah, Finkelstein is coming to moralize me about his story. And Nick just turned that into a joke. And now he's explained on his show that basically what he wanted to do in terms of intent he wanted to say, I'm not playing that game. Your stuff is a circus. You are a circus and you are inviting clowns in, but you're trying to get them serious. But by being serious, they kind of show a respect to you that you don't deserve. I'm going to come in and I'm going to say, fuck your couch. I'm going to say, you know, if it's going to be a circus, let's do this. Let's do this. I'm going to show you that I can be clownish in a funnier way than you are. And that is very interesting as an approach to say, look, I have such disrespect to you. It's a little bit what has been done. Increasingly, you've seen in the last 10 years, the independent voices of the internet responding in emails to the mainstream journalist, and they say, like, I think I may have started this. Like, I remember in 2015, 2016, responding to journalists and being like, I don't care. Like, write up whatever you want. In fact, here's some more bones for you to chew. Because you're going to write a hit piece about me, whatever, right? So whatever I say, you're not going to engage seriously with it. You're going to try to make it look as unimportant as possible so that your smearing of my reputation is done the way it's been ordered to you, little puppets. And one of the attitudes that people are increasingly taking, and you've seen Tucker Carlson has done it to New York Times journalists or whatever journalists were contacting him, he basically made jokes about how Andrew Tate is taking over the U.S. and that unfortunately Tucker has been recruited as part of this takeover. So trollishness of the mainstream journalist class is a style, but I've never seen it deployed onto a two-hour session like Nick did, where you didn't even know, is it what he's doing? Let's start with, so the whole interview started with, are you a racist? And as pointed by academic agent, it was an interview that was presenting itself as it's going to be friendly. It's not an ambush. And you know, Piers Morgan keeps repeating through this interview how it's not an ambush. And it's very feminine the way he does this, because I've been interacting with women and they want the saying of something. They don't really care about the actual state of thing. So I'll give you, for example, in a couple, repeatedly this has happened to me. You know, a woman will say, well, I want to respect your authority. You are my leader, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, now you are violating my authority when you do this, okay? So stop doing this. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to violate your authority by doing this, but I'm going to keep doing it. So the woman doesn't care about the actual outcome. She just wants it to be said. She thinks that words are not engaging herself into any consequences. She wants the word, the world of words for a woman is something independent of the world of the reality. Whereas, as far as I'm concerned, if we agree that this is how our couple will work, you don't just display this, you live by it. It's a contract. We've agreed on something. And the same thing is true of Piers Morgan here. What does it change whether it's you call it an ambush or not? You're playing dirty. You're trying to frame Nick into all this clips farming, just regular, reputational attack and all. You're not really trying to know who Nick is. That is just your excuse to show the clips. So what does it change whether he calls it an ambush or not? Everyone can see. It's whether you think of it as an ambush because Nick may have known that this was the case or not known. But what is an ambush? Is it the secrecy of it or is it the viciousness of it? Normally, we think of it as the viciousness of it. Now, normally, an ambush is also hidden. It also comes with lies because you want to get that person in an ambush. But ultimately, if you're vicious publicly against Nick, everyone's going to see it for what it is. So why insist all the time asking Nick, Nick, can you confirm to the public that it's not an ambush? It's like, what does Nick's words about it mean? Everyone can see what you're doing. Everyone can see what you're doing when you're going to the same old clips that everyone does every time they speak to Nick Fuentes. And it's so tiring, so tiring. So it starts with how are you a racist? And then you realize just the Marxist priors of a Piers Morgan, because he goes into what happened? What happened? And he goes into the father of Nick, because Nick had, you know, just in a half-end comment that he had done on his show years ago, presumably, Nick had said that, oh yeah, we're not going to this restaurant because it's not, you know, Nick may have said it provocatively, but something like, it's not part of white culture, it's black folk culture to go to that restaurant. Now, anyone who's been in the US knows there are these places. I didn't know because I was raised blind when I moved to the US in 2011. But eventually you get to understand that TGI Fridays is terrible cuisine. And it's like, it's vomit levels of pork chops that they will literally serve you. And you understand, okay, there's this Applebee's, there's this bizarre Applebee's black family reunion thing that happens. And yeah, this is all true. But Nick Fuentes just made a couple of jokes around this culture, this aspect of American culture that not many people know outside of the US. Like, as a Canadian, I couldn't think of a restaurant that is for black people, but it exists. It exists. Okay. So now Piers Morgan comes with, oh, well, maybe it's what your father said about whatever, Red Lobster or TGI Fridays. Maybe that's what seeded the idea of racism inside of you. And for this, the mainstream boomers understand so little about the mind of Nick Fuentes. It's so sad, really. Because Nick Fuentes, down the line, is not a racist. I wish people could understand this. Nick Fuentes is not a racist in his everyday life. He is racist, probably like the average white American. And that is the truth about Nick. Nick hangs out with various races. Nick has a very diversified circle of friends. It's not a case of a guy who says, I have one black friend. Nick lives in diversity. And he lives in Chicago, and he truly feels from there. And he, to the extent that he says, okay, I'm going to admit that I'm racist, it's almost like a leftist. It's not a hatred that he has. It's not the way leftists understand racism. It's not a hatred that he abhors. In fact, Nick is only joking around racism because it is what our generation has to do. Because way too much weight has been given to this. And it's been kind of a cognitive load for white people to constantly feel, never go there. There's this kind of region of their brain that they don't allow. And it comes in conflict with actual rational decision making. Because we all know that every person in America, this is not just whites, it's everyone, everyone integrates race to their decision making. They do so on various decisions that they make in life, where they will live, where they feel secure. they will find all sorts of other terms. They will find all sorts of other ways to express it. They will say, I'm looking for a zip code which is good for children, which has not too much violence. And down the line, we all know. We all know that it's it ties back to a form of racism. And even the leftists, if anything, the leftists may be more conscious of all this because they've had more exposure possibly to city life and diversity. So the way in which Nick Fuentes jokes and talks about racism is actually very often provocative, edgy stuff. Down his heart, he's probably even a little less racist than your average American. So in that context, to make a whole theory for Piers Morgan, for him to say, what was the seed? Was it your father? Was it transmitted culturally by this traumatic event at TGI Fridays? It's like, first, you are showing your lack of comprehension of Nick Fuentes. Second, you are showing your lack of comprehension of the rising forces of our generation who have decided to completely give up on your moral extortion around racism. Third, you have failed to understand the trollish nature of when we talk about all this and the real thing behind, is, let's be fair, everyone is racist. The left is right about this. But it's only when it's white people that it becomes a problem. And this, Nick gets to it eventually after defending and saying, well, look, Piers, you're being underhanded with attacking my family here. We get to it. So intellectually, the crowd and the normies are taken through a view of the world that has become careless about these labels and these attacks. That was very good. And at the same time, it was allowing Nick to set up a position of a moral high ground. Here you are, you fucking clown, because that's what you do. You host your fucking circus and you are making a spectacle out of people. And everyone is like the turkey getting stuffed when they get on Piers Morgan's show. This is how Nick describes what he does. Basically, what does Piers Morgan do? Well, he does what we were doing 8 years ago. He does internet blood sport with a bunch of cable TV style headings. He does internet blood sports with this. This is the addition here. Piers Morgan uncensored, little windows. This is the difference between Piers Morgan and internet blood sport. But in the times of internet blood sports, we were all having fun together. When you go on Piers Morgan, he's looking for the most provocative statements. He's not really engaged in intelligent discourse. If so, he wouldn't have all these clowns that he has on every week. He would have Papa JF to discuss something serious, like ballistics or whatever I'm on to that week. So Nick Fuentes just presents this circus and says, all right, you want a clown? You want a clown? I'm going to clown, but stop attacking my family. And then the clips farming part of the interview begins. Now it's all Piers Morgan getting all statements of Nick about, and what a beautiful thing to see all of these kind of top moments of Nick just being transmitted to the general public. It's heartwarming. Because these clips have made rounds again and again. They've been on every mainstream interview of Nick. They keep bringing them up. And it's like, they are historical clips. When Nick succeeds at regrouping his issues with women, Jews, blacks, it's like, here's what everyone needs to do. And you can't say there's anything wrong about what he's saying. You can't say it's false. You can't say society wouldn't be improved if each category did what they have to do to produce a better America. And so to see this and to see that all that Piers Morgan has is not that there's no problem with women or no problem with Jews or no. I've activated the subscription alarms. I have to turn this off. But we did get a super chat from Eric.
Moderation, bans, and memes. The other, a half century of funding, faith, and perfected boomerism by Piers Morgan. Who wins?
Well, we know who wins, but it takes time. So I had turned off the alerts. That's why it took time for me to get to your super chat. As far as who wins, we know who wins. Nick Fuentes represents a generation that will have been raised by us. They will have been raised by YouTube culture. They will have been raised by more edgy culture. You just see the numbers that people are putting these big creators on Rumble. So definitely there's a whole generation rising that will be completely insensitive to the boomerism of Piers Morgan. But it's going to take time. It's going to take time because they're not going away. They're just literally, we're going to have to wait for us to be old for the world to have been fixed on these questions. So yes, we win at the end, but we also die. There is some point at which we'll be old, edgy, and dying. That's what will happen. Beautiful clip farming here that was all coming to the advantage of Nick. And very interestingly, you know, the problem that people do with these clip farmings is they will start, if they don't straight out apologize, they will start saying, oh, this was said in a context. Nick didn't care about this. If you start saying this was said in another context, you're on the defensive. You are not standing by your art. Nick was super strong on this. He was like, everything I said in that clip is true. And so now you have a problem. Now you have a problem if you're Piers. It's like, oh no, he's basically doubling down. Well, what do you have? If he's doubling down on a lie, it would be easy to call him out. But Piers Morgan doesn't have anything to say against what Nick was saying in these clips. So we're really stuck in the moral tie here, domain. Piers cannot argue that it's wrong. He can only argue that it's distasteful. And then you have the whole inaction of the moralism, the boomer moralism, which has failed, and which is only really boomers will hear Piers Morgan and side with him. Boomers and people who are sensitive to original thinking and provocative thinking. Treshan Baptist says, Nick Fuentes is carrying all alternative streaming platforms. Well, definitely he is leading very strong at Rumble. I hope that YouTube, this is why I returned to YouTube partly. I hope that YouTube eventually becomes more opened. And I think they've been extremely open with my return. So I'm not promoting any sort of radicalism. I am just a man of another generation with weird ideas. You could call them weird by your standard, but they're really just reasonable ideas, and I'm mostly interested in the search for the truth, the public process of epistemology. And I will tell you what, since I returned to YouTube, all of my videos are monetized. And I've been talking about what I usually talk about. I've not been feeling oppressed. I've not been feeling censored. So it's working good. Genesis says, JF, to what degree was the alt-right a product of new atheism / skeptic movement? And would it be accurate to credit Nick's eventual success to this movement? Those are interesting thoughts. First, the extent to which new skepticism and atheism has induced the alt-right, Kind of in some indirect ways, but not directly. What's happening is that there was a trend on YouTube very early. It was basically second generation YouTube after the little, you know, there weren't much political discussions at the very beginning of YouTube. Eventually, the substantial commentary space of YouTube was fully covered by basically atheists. And you had the Amazing Atheist, for example. So they were all liberal atheists. And it's like, they weren't just talking about atheism. They were talking about all sorts of other things, but all sorts of grifters came in and they were all atheists. So you had these atheist channels that were supposedly looking for the truth. But the fact that the first contingent of the new atheist was so selected, they were so isolated in, like, they were such a special subset of the population. They were liberals generally coming from pro-institutional, pro-university culture, if they weren't straight out of the universities. So because of this, it led to a restricted space of IDs. They were incapable of talking about race. They were incapable of talking about all sorts of biological realities that are absolutely certain. So there you had the truth-seeking process that was facing an obstacle. Because you had these guys who had such boomer moral preferences that they were unable to engage with the subjects that we eventually covered. Now came the rise of a new generation of creators that were like, no, you don't select your truths. You want to go out there and say, I found the truth. God doesn't exist. Okay. Let's talk about the other truths that matter to society. And this was my generation of creators. It was Coach Red Pill. It was me. It was, you know, everything that happened at Warski Live, the internet blood sports and everything. So that generation was it caused by new atheism? Not fully. They were caused by their own political desires, but we were caused to the extent that we were seeing this cognitive obstruction that existed and this kind of reductionism to moral preferences. And we were saying there's something wrong there. There's not a proper pursuit of the truth. There's definitely just a side of the political landscape that is represented. And in that environment, it became very easy to say, well, there's something on the other side. I can do better. That's exactly what motivated me to get into the YouTube business. So I was like, what's available on offer is not enough. And back then, there weren't 1,000 different center-right conservative tough boys with guns and with what you know, this has become extremely regular. But back in my days, I would like be the first right-wing streamer. Back in those days, it was that tight. I was like, what? There's not a person in all those truth seekers and atheists. There's not a single person that can take a conservative opinion. That was like this. And it's partly because this was early internet. And don't forget that, you know, the Republicans and the conservatives of the U.S., were not as connected as the liberals, because internet was synonymous with being closer to developed areas, in bigger cities, closer to universities. All of these factors led to a first wave of YouTubers that were strictly atheist. And we were pissed off, and we felt like I was looking at the landscape, and I was like, there's no one speaking about liberty. There was Stefan Molyneux, very early, that you could say right-winger from a libertarian perspective. But there was nothing else. And I was like, I don't even care whether I'm right wing that much, but it's like someone's got to make a case for the dangerous ideas. And that's kind of how I approached it, because, you know, I'm a right winger. I believe in small government that lets people be and that lets families be. But I'm not that much of an ideologue as people would make me out to be. I'm mostly a guy who's pissed at the lack of quality of what we can have on the internet. And I was pissed back then for the reason that I just laid out. I'm still pissed now for other reasons. Like, I think that the rebalancing of all these right-wing voices, these Truth Social, MAGA, QAnon, crap artists, is kind of disappointing. And I have to overcorrect like the world overcorrects, which is why I'm being critical of someone like Ian Malcolm these days. And at times I criticize Candace Owens on certain things. It's because I want the public epistemology process to be more serious and more efficient. And that is the mission of my life. That is what I pursue every day since 10 years. But sometimes I pursue it against them, and sometimes it's against them. And in the end, no one loves me. In the end, I just have you guys on my side. Because with all the alliances and how the media works, whether it's the old guard or the new guard, there's all these alliances and people who have deals of not attacking each other. And I'm like, I'm never gonna get into any of this. I ultimately attack who I feel needs a small correction to be put back in the line for truth. And sometimes that means attacking the left. Sometimes these days it means more attacking the kooks that are parasitizing the right. They are a problem. They are a problem. Moving forward with the analysis of Piers Morgan. So then Nick points out the obvious thing, which is a very nice talking point to bring to the normie public. He says, everybody except white people are racist. That's a very interesting highlight. A very important idea that normies can readily observe. Cayman JRP says, Jeff, are you an atheist? Yes, I am, to the extent that I don't believe in God. Sometimes I go to the church and I hear the words of the Bible. But I like the historical Jesus. I like to think that Jesus existed and that he was crucified. That being said, I have difficulty thinking that the planet Earth and the world as it stands has been created by a being above the universe. I don't believe this, and because of it, I probably will never qualify as a Christian in terms of belief, but I like to think of myself still as a cultural Christian. Now, I don't need the belief in God, really. I'm happy to be part of the compost pile, you know. Most people find that the sentence of Fight Club, where all you are the all dancing, all singing crap of the world, I actually enjoy this. To me, it's not an insult. Like, I think it's an honor to be part of the shit pile that life is. Like, topsoil, by the way, when you walk outside, this is all dead bodies of trees and other life forms that have existed. You are just a bubble in the topsoil, and you will return to the topsoil very soon. And personally, I find this white pilling, that shit can rise into some complex forms that give you a feeling of existing for 60 years. It's like, wow, what a privilege. How many molecules of shit can feel this? None. we are very, very lucky to have risen from absolutely absolute crap. We have a super chat. Oops. Yeah, I have to work a better.
I was system. A big fan of Harris and Hitchens as a kid. Now, knowing of the heritage of their matrilineal line, I understand why they intermingled their atheism with calls for war. I think their atheism was only a Trojan horse.
Absolutely, bro. It's like, this is the questioning of my childhood and teenage years. I'm seeing all these authors that I want to kind of heroicize. I want to see them as heroes. And they're the only thing I know intellectually. Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Hitchens, because we're being served this by this early YouTube scene. Those are the guys honing with facts and logic before the Ben Shapiro's of this world come to do it for the right. And it's like, I want to idolize these people, but at the same time, when it comes to Middle Eastern wars, something is wrong. It's like, I follow Sam Harris. Okay, the book Lying, the book Moral Landscape. Okay, I'm following. But along the way, something goes wrong. And it's like, every time it's about the Middle East and Muslims, you guys are just, you go absolutely uncontrollable and unjustified. It's like, I wish these people, these intellectuals, who I didn't conceive of them as Jewish intellectuals back then, because to me that didn't even exist. It's like, I was buying in the crap of society that was telling me, it doesn't matter if they're Jewish. But eventually I realized there's only one explanation here. They're Jewish, and that's why when they talk about Muslims, they go fucking wild. That has to be. It has to be the reason. Oh, shit. I have to turn off these alerts. I have to find a way to turn them off. Sorry. So eventually I realized there is no other way to explain the world than Sam Harris is Jewish, and because he's Jewish, he's always going to be funded by Jewish interest. His philosophy will always serve Israeli interest, and that's it. You know, it's people are trying to make all sorts of cases around white supremacy, and but the history of my life is just this. It's like, what the fuck happens when Sam Harris isn't talking about philosophy but goes into Muslim religion? And why doesn't he see the radicalism on the side of Israel? This is just my question, my base question that led me to become who I am. An honest inquiry that had only one answer. And how did I try to find other answers? Oh, did I try to look inside of myself and see, maybe I'm not getting it. Maybe I'm broken. Maybe I'm erroneous in the way I interpret what he says. But no, down the line, after checking myself and after reviewing, I've concluded there is simply an ethnic interest that is transpiring through our intellectual class. And maybe it's related to the fact that there's like 50% more Jews represented in podcasts and in public talk and in books. And just this realization will change your life. You will understand the world better, but people will start hating you also. Plapidas says, Jeff, I missed your 3006 analysis show. Sorry if you mentioned it already. But have you ever fired a hunting rifle, and what did you shoot it at? Yeah, I've shot I've shot when I was in the US my AR-15 in practice range. I've also shot, if I remember, what is the ammo? The 308 Winchester, a very powerful ammo. I've shot it at trees. I've seen the impacts on trees, and I've seen the impacts on, in shooting ranges. Let me check if it's really the 308. Is it 308 Winchester? Or is it the 358? The 308 Winchester, rimless, bottlenecked rifle. Oh, yeah. 308 Winchester. That is the higher power rifle that I've been shooting. Let me tell you, this gives you quite the kick on the shoulder. 308 Winchester. Because I was like, hey, if I'm going to shoot bullets, I might as well go for it. And I was at the Bassa Pro Shops, and I was like, what are the high power bullets? And he was like, what do you want to hunt with this? I was like, maybe I'll go for wild boar, but generally I just like high power. And they had the 308 Winchester. So I had a scope mounted on my rifle. I think it was a bolt action, three bullets in the magazine like slot, three bullet bolt action. And bro, the hit on your shoulder, it's something. I mean, if you don't, you have to act, and you have to plan how you're going to absorb that shock, because you can have pain in your arm for days after if you don't do it well. So I learned to master this thing. I've had a Glock also. So Glock, AR-15, and 308 Winchester were my weapons of choice in the US. But in Canada, I don't know that any of these guns would be legal, much less common. We have a super chat by Ariel Suarez. Thank you so much. He says, Ayn Rand was an even more extreme example to me. She was the poster girl for rational egoism and individualism. She contradicted all of her principles when it came to Israel and war in general. I mean, it's stunning. I don't know about Ayn Rand's position on Israel. I would be interested to learn about it, Ariel. So if you have any link about this, send them to me in DM. But it's fascinating. It's like, wow, you have this whole philosophical framework, but down the line, you fit all of it to whatever are your preferences. It just so happens. Oh, I've developed the moral landscape here, but it just so happens that, you know, it's preferable to defend Israel. Like, wow, bro, you've made, you didn't take the easy route. You made a whole philosophical system that stands in appearance as being objective and rational. All of this down the line to just lay out your subjective preferences about your people winning over other people. Wow. You know, credit. I mean, well, when you look at how Israeli influence has just taken over so much of the American media, it's like, wow, respect, bro. You set this all up just because you were scared that your people would not survive in the Middle East? Cloto Teta says, in 10 years, I'll be here again listening to JF giving the same lecture. Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm going to cognitively age. Maybe I won't be as edgy as I was when I was young, but I'll certainly be rambling the exact same thing for the next 20 years. Absolutely.
Would have liked to hear Nick say you can call my father a racist, but I call him a man who wanted to protect his family. Important that we redefine racist away from a pejorative and towards a descriptor of a sensible pattern recognizer.
Yeah, but the thing is, Nick was visibly worried about any sort of social punishment or consequences for his father, who is a private man. And so I understand that he wouldn't go there and shouldn't go there. When people are trying to bring your private people into the public discussion, it's a dirty, vicious hit, and you have to handle it with care. And you cannot just, because there is so much in just your admission there, that would mean that potentially the boss of the father could have fired him, saying, "Oh, well, your child made a defense of racism in your name." So no, I understand why you wouldn't engage with that point of peers. Zeppelin Nizer says, "Lol, you haven't aged a day, JF. I love you." Yeah, I mean, I'm 41 years old and I still have my baby face. With some tricks of camera, we can look very shiny and still young. And also, you know, being the geek that I am, I believe that I age a little slower than people, at least at the skin level, because I really don't get much sun exposure. So I still look with a baby face type of skin, certainly. And that's probably because I don't get much sun. Background looks good, Ty Rogerson. Yeah, I've been creating these little Lego. Those are genuine. They are made of actual Lego pieces. Like, this is all built by small Lego pieces. They came all unassembled. And assembling these things is fascinating. Here I have an otherworldly marine sponge-like plant. Isn't that an absolute beauty? All this made of genuine Lego blocks. They are, well, when I say genuine, they are Lego-like. They are not branded as Lego. They are the succulents available on Amazon. Succulent block plants, decorative block plants. And I'm working to add a little more. I have some cactuses here. Me and my children had fun setting those up, producing them this morning. And then I built the little stands so that they could be displayed in my background. Barnaby Bruto says, "I was at the Walmart the other day and saw the whole plant collection from Lego and was wondering who the fuck buys that. Looks like JF was the answer." Yeah, the plural of cactuses is cacti. Oh, you got me, Clototeta. I got fact-checked live. But yeah, Barnabé, I like this section of the Lego. Of course, because... I must find a way to disable these alerts. I like this kids section. We spend a lot of time there, being a single dad. You know, kids want to go through... Every time we go to Walmart, we have to go through all of the aisle. They look at every toy. And I notice this section of the Lego spot that is less toys, but it's more like decorative plants. They've generated all sorts of decorative plants. Now, the problem is they are a little too big. So I went for Amazon, and there's another company that does Lego-like blocks. And, you know, just so you know, each of these things is a little Lego piece. It can be disassembled. Like, look at this. This is a leaf formed by four different Lego pieces. And then it has a little Lego hook and you can just clip it on the ring. And all of this is small, small pieces. I find this absolutely beautiful. With my passion for the biological world, I think that those smash my passions for the pixel world in the biological world. Austin Kaser says, cactuses and cacti are both correct. Cactuses is less pretentious. Exactly. I'm a man of the people, so I say cactuses. Continuing for our analysis of the Pierce Fuentes interview, then the Holocaust moment comes. And here Nick play, I was always wondering, because there was a time 1 or 2 years ago where Nick started questioning certain aspects of World War II. And I was like, whoa, he's going, and you know, I don't feel that I have a leash on anyone. Like I don't control people, and I don't morally judge people for drifting away from my own beliefs. But I was like, whoa, Nick is stating some wild stuff on World War II. And he was memeing around the cookies with Milo. And I was like, oh, that's a surprising edgy level. I didn't think much of it. But I was like, oh, that's a surprise to me that he goes that far while wanting to maintain his credibility. But here you can see the kind of fruits of this, which is Nick has never really if you listen to what he says seriously, Nick has no position on World War II. And he says, look, I don't know the counts of deaths. There are historians. I've read both sides. And it's really hard to know. That's the reality. And I would stand with him on this. It's like, oh yeah, given the fact that we can't even know what happened last week or last month, we probably can't know what happened 80 years ago. That would be my general position. Like, there is so much spam. Like, I have seen the spam of the modern world, and you have to think that in the old world, it was even worse because everything was spam. Everything was sponsored. Everything was funded and actively imposed. Because, okay, if you're a historian in 2025, maybe you got some freedom for yourself. You started a YouTube channel. Maybe you can ask hard questions. But if you're a historian in 1960 and you've been written a letter of recommendation to get your trust fund or your grants and your awards, and then you got employed at a university by some other ethnics that are also friends with your family and friends with the mom who's also Jewish, and you're if you're a historian in the 60s, you are part of a web of boomerism. That is, it's almost hard to express how selective we've been in telling history. Now, it would seem that as this part of the Holocaust interview starts, Nick Fuentes says, whatever the number is, what is the number I have to say, Pierce? And then I was like, is he joking? Is he walking back on a past statement? And ultimately, it's Nick Fuentes joking. Like, if you're going to take us hostage, if you're going to cancel everyone who thinks differently than your number, I might as well just say whatever number you want me to say. So it was the continuation of the cookie joke with Milo, which is, When Nick saw the platter of cookies and Milo asked, how many cookies are there? Nick said, I know the number I'm supposed to say. And it's the same thing here. It's like, oh yeah, I know, Piers, what you want me to say. Let me say it to warm your heart. Let me say it to make sure you feel safe. But at the same time, it's like, is there really a search for truth if we say things to satisfy people, for people to feel safe, for creating a safe space? there's no search for truth, then our public communication is of a moral matter. And then our statements do not have the credibility of even having been fair attempts at finding the truth. And you can feel this from this interview. It's like Nick Fuentes plays the hostage. And then somehow Piers Morgan kind of takes it as at the first degree. And it's like, oh, I'm so happy that I got you to recognize this publicly. But it's like, hey, you know, an honest person takes into account whether his presence is extortionate unto others. Like, if you were to hold a gun to someone's head and you say, do you like vanilla ice cream? It would be your responsibility as an intellectual if the person says, I do like vanilla ice cream. It would be your responsibility to say, no, he had a gun on his head. Maybe he doesn't like vanilla ice cream. I'm not going to take this as fact. Now, Piers Morgan somehow tries to be boomerishly oblivious to the play that Nick Fuentes did about hostage taking, to this play that he said, what is the number? Whatever is the number. And so as Piers Morgan tries to probe this and say, are you joking? Is that real? What are you saying, Nick? And Nick slips in another layer of joke where he says, no, I think it must certainly be the number you say. In fact, I think it could be 100 times more. And that's Nick adding to the comedic parody that this discussion had become. And much respect to him, that is fucking funny. It's funny to have such a disparate circus clown operator as Piers Morgan to be trying to desperately grasp to, oh yeah, I had you admit this, right, Nick? Right, Nick? You said that you recognize the official number, Nick. That is now your position. This was not your position before. And it shows them. Here you have a full demonstration of the moral extortionate boomerism right there, video on your screen. I love this. That was absolute poetry. And then Nick goes on, talks about Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens. Is bizarre behavior on this side. Bizarre behavior with Tucker Carlson around Nick. We all saw it. We all saw the two faces. What does that mean? Honestly, it's like, I don't want to accuse Tucker of being some sort of a fed or operative for forces of any sort. But it's like, what justifies this two-faced behavior? This change, this attitude when he's there, attitude when he's not there. You know, as a public person, I've had conflicts and then I've had forgiveness between people, even with Nick. But at no point in time was I saying something against Nick and then saying something and then saying the contrary on another show or in the presence of another people. I've always stood for my opinion at the time that I express it, and I remained consistent in that way. Tucker, from one day to the other, has been inconsistent. In fact, he does this whole softball interview of Nick less than 3 months after calling him a gay fed. What is that about? And then he reverts and starts talking against him days later. That's bizarre. And then there was the end of it, where there's two subjects at the end that we need to cover at the end of the interview. Piers Morgan checks with Nick Fuentes whether the interview was an ambush. And I've commented on this earlier. What does that mean? If you've been vicious throughout, if you've been clip farming, what does it change whether you call it an ambush or not? But it's like, Piers was so interested at protecting his own reputation. And it seems like he wanted to protect himself from the potential crowds of the internet that would go after him. But it's like, we've all seen how vicious you've been. So whether Nick calls it an ambush or not, people are going to judge you for what you've done. You've been morally extortionate. You've been trying to get admissions like Nick is a fucking torture prisoner of yours. That's what you are. You've been trying very hard to make him back out on things, and you've been played because he made it funny, your attempt. And the final thing that Piers Morgan did in this interview is this whole concept that, oh, you've never had sex with woman. Ha ha ha. And people are now exposing something that Nick didn't know during the interview. But Piers Morgan is a literal cuck. Piers Morgan offers a 6-week sabbatical vacation to his wife, during which she actually poses with other men in bed. Like, there are pictures of his wife. It seems that his wife is also threatening him with divorce and making all sorts of things public as part of it. Seems like a very weird situation. A very weird allowed cuckoldry. But nevertheless, this whole point that, oh, Nick, you didn't have sex. Well, first, the rising generation is very much like Nick. Because the rising generation doesn't have the absolute moral, chaotic hedonism of the boomers, which is one of the most disgusting generations that has ever existed. Like this obsession, oh, you don't have sex? It's like, bro, the entirety of the sex you've had in life didn't matter because you were wearing a condom like a fucking idiot. Or she had the birth pill. All of the sex that you think you've done is an illusion. It's as bad as porn. And there is a generation rising that understands this. And that understands that sex without the baby making is actually putting yourself into emotional extortion territory. And it will always lead to disappointment, to loss of time, and to basically very unhealthy behavior. And again, you have here a Piers Morgan, because of his boomerism, completely missing this new trend. Like, the next generation will not be obsessed about sex the way the boomers were, because they know the illusion. And it's one thing, everyone kind of knows that porn is an illusion. But I think the generation rising, they know that birth pill sex is an illusion, and condom sex is an illusion, and sex for exploratory, relationship building is illusion. It seems that the only one who aren't in on it are hoes. These women who are sexually promiscuous. But it's like, you're going to get fucked by a bunch of very low IQ people who are just like sex spammers. It's not quality people. Green Fez says, very long JF episode. Sorry I'm late. Well, 1 hour, 20 minutes. I don't think it's super long. It's our standard. 1 hour, 1 hour, 20 minutes, depending on what I have to talk about. So that is my conclusion for the Piers Fuentes interview, a demonstration of mastery by Nick. I was scared. I was like, is he going too hard? But then I felt relieved at the end. I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. The next generation must benefit from leaders who are freeing spaces of cognitive liberty, because the emotional extortionate practice of Piers Morgan, this has to stop. It is not a healthy way to maintain society. And it will systematically be anti-white in the way it's unfold, in the way it's deployed. So an absolute historical performance, in my view. And you know, this is a meme that will stay. I mean, this guy. And you know, Nick Fuentes represented what he said as me mom. I don't even know if he said the words me mom, but it's the mockery and the parody of him that eventually caught on as a meme, me mom. Which is like, what is this English, British guy, you know, coming to moralize me about? I think it will be retained in the collective imaginary. Quickly on the other news before we close the show, Tucker Carlson comes out on the Charlie Kirk assassination. He basically says, I'm not going to comment on all the conspiracy theories on one side or on the official narrative. He says, basically, I'm friends with Erica Kirk. I'm friends with a lot of people inside TP USA, and I'm friends with Candace Owen. And what he says is, no, I will not denunciate people like Candace Owen. I will not take side, because ultimately what I want is everyone to pursue the truth. And wherever it leads you, if in your heart you are searching for the truth, I will respect you. And even if I have friends on both sides of this issue, I will not denunciate you or disavow you. So basically a very shy take of Tucker, basically telling us, I'm not going to comment on the ballistics or whatever, because I want the truth to be found by the police, but at the same time, I don't have special access to any truth. That is it for tonight. User GT says, JF was mentioned by Nick Fuentes twice last night on his stream. Yeah, people have sent me clips. Thank you so much, guys. Yes, and as I mentioned yesterday, we should be getting to talk to Nick at some point, hopefully before Christmas or around Christmas. I believe I don't have any intent on this interview in terms of squeezing Nick on anything. I think that first and foremost, Nick is just outperforming any expectations. So he's making so much good for our countries and for the West in general. I don't want to squeeze him, but I would like it to be a reflection and perhaps an openness, a call to openness as part of Christianity and Christmas. I would like it to be just a warm Christmas stream. You know, when I see ankle biters of Nick, you know, Arval, much respect to Arval. I also have much respect to Nick. What I'd like in an ideal world is that Arval pursues his line, Nick pursues his line. We all recognize it's two different projects, but there's no reason one would be in conflict with the other. Even Candace, like, okay, Candace is divagating, she's psycho. Let us use these things. I mean, the left has their psychos. They don't give a shit about it. They support them. Hopefully, what I would like is a Christmas of unity and love between everyone. And just like Tucker kind of said, as long as everyone in their heart is pursuing the truth, what we got is so much better than the systematic lie that was sold to us for the last 50 years.